All right, good morning. Thanks so much for coming out. It's a beautiful day. I'm glad you chose to be with us. Hopefully, God's word can be an encouragement to us. Again, I constantly think of Hebrews and where it talks about gathering together, being motivated to love others and good deeds. So hopefully, as we hear about God's word and God's love for us, we're motivated. Motivated to love by serving others and, just making much of God that way. We go through books of the Bible, and right now we are in 1 Corinthians. And if you have a pew Bible, and I'll tell you what page that is in 1 second. Kirk should have had this ready long ago, but... Oh, it's my fault. Yeah. Thanks, Kirk. 818 is where you can find it in your pew Bible for using that. I will be using New Living Translation, which is on the screen up front, so you can choose which version you like. Both essentially saying the same thing. Okay, let me give you a quick overview of last week. Last week, Paul was addressing this idea of asceticism, where basically you punish your body to become more spiritual. And it was being played out where people who were married were choosing to essentially punish themselves by not being involved in sexual relationship with their spouse in an attempt to be more holy. And Paul was saying, no, that's not it at all. Okay? That is not how we are to approach our relationship with our spouse. And we talked a little bit about, and Kirk sent out an email on this, where in verse 5, chapter 7, verse 5 says, do not deprive each other of sexual relations. So he's even telling them not to do that. He says, unless you both agree to refrain from sexual intimacy for a limited time so you can give yourself more completely to prayer. Okay, so we talked about this idea of, being purposeful about getting away from your spouse, if that's the case that he's describing here, where you're committing yourself to prayer, or I would say even spiritual matters, just making an effort, making time to be with God, and then get back together. And we think, how little we do that. As a spouse, I can't tell you many times where I've gotten away from my wife just to dedicate myself to praying for our family, praying for her, and that's a shame. It should be part of my year as I plan out my year. Okay. And then he actually, if you read through that chapter, you'll see he talks about, it's probably not a good idea to marry at the time. And I'll explain why. I explained last week, but I'll hit it again this week. All right. So here we go. I'm going to read 16 through 19 in chapter 7. It says this. Don't you wives realize that your husband might be saved because of you? And don't you husbands realize that your wives might be saved because of you? He was talking about people who were married. One of them becomes a believer. And then the question was, should we leave our spouse? And he's saying, no. Okay, here's what his response is. He says, each of you should continue to live in whatever situation the Lord has placed you, and remain as you were when God first called you. This is my rule for all the churches. And then he goes through, he says, for instance, a man who was circumcised before he became a believer should not try to reverse it, probably for a number of reasons. And a man who was uncircumcised when he had become a believer should not be circumcised now. For it makes no difference whether or not a man has been circumcised. The important thing is to keep God's commandments. Okay, so he's going to say this several times in this section about stay where you are. Now, Paul's not against advancing yourself and making things better and pressing on and making a difference. Okay, he's not against that at all. Why is he constantly saying, though, like he says right here, he says, each of you should continue to live in whatever situation the Lord has placed you. Okay? And I think, based on my life, the reason he's saying that is, think of how often you sit around either blaming or dreaming about your situation. Right? It's constantly where, well, if only I made more money, then things would be better. Or if only my wife would see it my way, then things would be better. Or if my kids would get their act together, if my situation would just change, things would be better. And I like how he says, instead of thinking about your situation, he says, it's the important things, or important thing is to keep God's commandments. So, do we spend more time in our lives trying to fix our situation, or are we trying to fix our level of obedience? So, in other words, when things are going south for me, I don't sit around thinking, man, you know what? I just need to obey God. What's God saying? God, the God who created this entire universe, who is sovereign over everything, I need to just be obedient to him. Typically, that's not how I respond to tough times. It's how do I get out of these tough times? And I'm sure being married to a spouse who doesn't believe the same way you do is a tough time. And I would easily fantasize about how to get out of this situation. This is not fun, God. I don't like this. Change it, or I'm getting out of here. And Paul's saying, listen, don't worry about your situation. God, who's in control, has it under control. You obey me. And again, I'm thankful for my kids for a number of reasons, but I can think of how this works out in a parent relationship. Right? There's a lot of times my kids don't understand what's going on, and I just tell them, it doesn't matter. You just do it. You just obey me. And then the beautiful thing is when they don't obey me and something bad happens to them, what's our response? I told you. Right? So we get this, but yet it's so hard to do. We constantly want to fix our situation. And this isn't great counseling either. Oh, Brad, no, I just want you to know my life is, you know, there's this going wrong, this is going on. I think you should just stay as you are. Right? They would be like, what? What are you talking about? I thought you were a jerk. Now I know you're a jerk. Right? But that's what Paul's saying. We need to really think about this verse. I mean, it's really interesting when you get ready to teach something, you read it over and over and over again, and you start seeing a theme, you start seeing things jump out at you, and you're going to see, I think he goes back to this idea again. Okay? All right. We should concentrate on serving, obeying the Lord in our present situation rather than spending most of our energy on trying to change our situation. Okay, think about that in your life. Go ahead. Let me read verse 20. Yes, each of you should remain as you were when the Lord called you. Go ahead. Okay, so again, the context is a believer married to an unbeliever. Okay? Now, some of you may say, this is great. I love being where I'm at. I'm not going to do anything. Like, you know, things are pretty comfortable, and you're like, thank you, Paul, for saying that. I'm chilling. Okay? No. He's talking about your situation that you're in. Okay? He's not talking about your spiritual walk with God. That is to be continually growing. You are to continually be pressing on. In Hebrews 5, I've read this many times, but I'll read it again. It says this. It says, there's so much more we would like to say about this, but it's difficult to explain, especially since you are spiritually dull and don't seem to listen. You have been believers so long now that you ought to be teaching others. Instead, you need someone to teach you again and again and again the basic things. Okay, so you see this idea that Paul's not saying stay where you are in every aspect of your life. If you're a new believer, immature, Paul's not saying just stay there. Okay, this is about your situation that you're in. Go ahead. All right, let me read the next section, 21 through 24. Are you a slave? Don't let that worry you. But if you get a chance to be free, take it. And remember, if you were a slave when the Lord called you, you are now free in the Lord. And if you were free when the Lord called you, you are now a slave to Christ. God paid a high price for you, so don't be enslaved by the world. Each of you, dear brothers and sisters, should remain as you were when God first called you. All right, so you see the context here. To make a long story short, it doesn't matter what situation you're in. He's saying, stay in that situation. Okay? Because your situation doesn't determine your walk with God. And actually, if we picked our situation, the situations we would pick would probably cause us to walk away from God, if you think about it. So anyway, as far as a slave is free, okay, Galatians talks about that. I'll read that. It's kind of an interesting idea here. 4:5 says this. God sent him to buy freedom for us who were slaves to the law. So even if you don't think you're a slave, okay? So even if you're not a slave, okay, we all were slaves to sin. And that's what Paul is saying here, that even if you're literally a slave, or as he's talking, you know, in this situation, he's talking metaphorically, you're a slave to sin. He's saying there's freedom through Christ. We now are free from sin. We're free from sin. We're free from Satan. We're free from death. Okay, so we can live as a free man regardless of our situation. And then the person who is a free man, a freed man, can live as a slave. So that may be a little confusing, so let me read that to you. 1 Peter. Sometimes to get you back, I'll tell a quick side story. And every time I see free man, I think of Tristan and Trace laughing hysterically because of Robin Williams, who went to get he got a tattoo of free man on his chest. Did anybody see this movie? And he was telling it to a Chinese guy or something like that. And he said, free man. He's like, oh, yeah, free man. He's like, yeah, I want free man. He woke up in the morning, he has Fremont tattooed on his chest. So when I see freed man, it makes me think of Robin Williams. So it's hard for me to focus unless I share that story with you. So I got that out there. If you see that movie, it's funny. All right. For you are free, yet you are God's slaves. So don't use your freedom as an excuse to do evil. Okay? Yeah, we're free now. Doesn't matter of our situation. We're a free man. Okay? Sorry. Free man. But that doesn't mean we have an excuse to go do sin now. Okay? Some people look at it that way. All right. Again, our lives should not be about changing our situation. That's what 20 and 24 are saying. But about keeping God's commands. Doesn't matter your situation. It's about keeping God's commands. So, what is God's commands? Jesus summarized it in Matthew 22, 37 through 40. He says, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. As second, equally important, love your neighbor as yourself. So if you're confused what Paul's telling us to focus on, Jesus makes it clear. Okay? Instead of worrying about your situation, instead of thinking every way possible to change it, I think Paul's saying, you know what? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. And again, I'm not saying that this is easy. You know, some of us live in horrible situations. And I'm not trying to trivialize that. Thank you. That's what I get when I make fun of people. I always look stupid. But anyway, that's what God's calling us to do. Okay? That's what we need to think about. All right. Next section, 25 through 28. Now, regarding your question, remember, this is a letter written to Paul from a church where they're asking him questions. He says, now regarding your question about young women who are not yet married, I do not have a command from the Lord for them. Jesus didn't speak on this. But the Lord in his mercy has given me wisdom that can be trusted, and I will share it with you. Because of the present crisis, that's what we were really talking about last week. There was something going on. We don't know what it is, but there was a crisis going on. He says, because of that crisis, I think it is best to remain as you are. There he is saying it again. If you have a wife, do not seek to end the marriage. If you do not have a wife, do not seek to get married. Okay, we saw from the beginning, he's not saying that one's better than the other or that one should be pursued more than another. Each one's a gift. And he's just saying, stay as you are in the current crisis situation that's going on. But if you do get married, it is not a sin. And if a young woman gets married, it is not a sin. However, those who get married at this time will have troubles. And I'm trying to spare you those problems. We talked about it. In a crisis situation where things are really bad, it's probably not a good idea to take on a spouse. Okay? Even today, we would kind of give the same advice to people. If their lives are completely screwed up and things are just really bad, we'd probably, especially married people, probably say, you know what? Taking a spouse at this time may not be a good idea. And Paul's going to go on and explain why. Okay, next. 29 through 31. But let me say this, dear brothers and sisters, the time that remains is very short. So from now on, those with wives should not focus only on their marriage. Those who weep or who rejoice or who buy things should not be absorbed by their weeping or their joy or their possessions. Those who use the things of the world should not become attached to them. For this world, as we know it, will soon pass away. All right. So, think about what he just said here. He's responding in a letter to people who are asking, should we get married or not? Especially the young woman he's talking about in this situation. And then he goes on to say, he's like, listen. Essentially, all the humans need to be aware of this. Whether you're married, whether you weep, whether you rejoice, or you buy things. I think he's covering everybody. Okay? He's saying no matter who you are, okay, he's saying this. You're going to die. Okay? I think that's kind of what he's saying. Listen, and you're asking me these questions. You're concerned. You have all these problems. The situations look bleak. Blah, blah, blah. You know, there's crisis going on. Just remember, you're going to die. You're probably not even going to, it's going to happen sooner than you think. Right? A few people sit here and go, man, my life is just taking forever to get over. Right? It happens quick. Especially the older you get, you start looking back and you're amazed at how quick it's gone. In James, it says, our life is like a vapor. So in light of eternity, you know, how long is our existence here? Not very long. And I think the point is, we can't get carried away with our situations. Because even if your situation really, really stinks, there's good news at the end of it. You're going to die. Now, in America, we think that's bad news. Because we got it pretty good. In third world countries, they're pretty excited about dying. Because their life stinks in some ways. It's hard. Okay? And he's saying, listen, relax. Someday, those who believe in Jesus, you're going to spend eternity, which is way longer than this life that you're consumed with. Let it go. Relax. Your situation, it really doesn't matter in light of eternity. Now, it's hard to have that mindset, right? This is a mindset that you constantly need to be reminded of. This is one of the reasons we gather together, to be reminded that life is not just about the other 6 days that you're grinding on your daily routine. We're getting together to remind each other, your life is hard, but there's victory at the end. And that is eternity in heaven with God, no more tears, no more pain, no more suffering, as good as it gets. So, an eternal perspective gets our attention off of our situation. Have you ever been around people like that who live in light of eternity? You know, like some bad things are going on. They're like, it's not really that big a deal. You're like, what do you mean it's not a big deal? Well, you know, they're just living in light of eternity. This doesn't matter. Okay, I think we constantly put too much focus on the here and now. I know I do. Okay, and Paul's saying at the end, he's saying, look at that again. He says, those who use these things of the world should not become attached to them. For this world, as we know it, will soon pass away. Okay, we know the end of the game. Okay, we win. Okay, we shouldn't get as stressed out as we get. Okay, there is a conspiracy. Okay, Jesus is going to return and we're going to go to heaven. All right. 32a, I want you to be free from the concerns of this life. That sounds good, right? Now, how do we do it? He says right here, the idea of being free from the concerns of this life is to remember that our time here is short. I'm trying to think of a situation where when you were in it, it just completely consumed you. You thought everything was, the whole world was revolving around that. And then when you got on the other side of it, you looked back and you're like, I can't believe I just wasted energy and time on caring about that. Well, that's easy to do for a certain situation. What Paul's saying is, that's how we need to look at our whole life. Okay, we shouldn't be so concerned and stressed out about it. It's so short. Okay, next. The second part of 32. An unmarried man can spend his time doing the Lord's work and thinking how to please the Lord. All right. Advantage to the gift of singleness. Okay, remember we said marriage is a gift, singleness is a gift. The reality is they can spend more time doing the Lord's work and thinking how to please Him. Now, how many single guys have you talked to, or even single women, who have that attitude? They're like, man, I just thank God for the gift of singleness. Because you know what? I'm not weighed down with some spouse who's driving me crazy. I get to pursue God, serve God, love others in a way that I couldn't if I was married. We would probably look at that person and be like, what are you talking about? How can you be content and happy when you're single? I mean, in our society, that's frowned upon. Like, oh, you poor thing, you're by yourself. Wonder what's wrong with her. Right? I know, you guys are like, I can't, but I would never think that. Okay? Or I could say, what's wrong with him? All right? But do we look at those people and say, man, what an advantage they have? Look at the opportunity they get to serve, like being married me. I can't. Okay, Paul is making that point, and he knows because he's single. All right, is there anything else? All right, next, 33. But a married man has to think about his earthly responsibilities and how to please his wife. Royce, are you laughing? Okay, so there is a difference between married and unmarried. Go ahead. Disadvantage to the gift of marriage, he has to think about his earthly responsibilities and how to please his wife. Now, first of all, what jumped out at me was we need, I'll say guys, okay, he's going to say the same thing to girls. We need to be putting time into this. Like some of us are shocked, me included, that it takes effort to have a good relationship, right? Sometimes I'm like, my goodness, are you serious? It takes this much work? Now, I mean, my wife, I'm lucky. I mean, she's great. But still, Paul's saying, the Bible's saying it takes work, so I can say it. Okay? I need to be thinking. Instead of being shocked that I have to think about this, it should be like a monthly, a weekly, a daily thing where it's like, okay, what can I do to please my wife? All right, I know her now. I've been with her for a long, long time. am I using that to my advantage to think about how I can please her? Or am I putting more time and effort into a thousand other things that I got going on? Like here's the thing. Do I put more time in figuring out plays for basketball as I'm coaching basketball than I do pleasing my wife? That's a problem, right? Okay, but no one comes up to me and says, Brad, I notice you've been spending a lot of time coaching basketball, coaching golf, you know, just, are you putting that much effort into pleasing your wife? Right? We don't hear that, but that's what we should be saying. Okay? Again, guys, don't be shocked that it takes effort to please your wife. Okay, this is something we should be teaching our kids nicely. Not like, you're not going to believe how hard this is. Okay? It's got to be done in a way like, hey, you need to put time and effort into this. Okay? And the other thing is, I think the good marriages that you see, it's kind of a shame because we just look at it like it happens naturally. And we kind of look at them like, why is it so easy for them? But I think if you talk to them, say, you know, I would like to ask you some questions. I bet you find out that the guy puts some effort into it, that the wife puts effort into it. Oh, yeah, I know. I really hate, cooking this meal because it makes the house smell, but I know he likes it. So, you know, it's just a little thing I can do. You'd be like, wow, that's weird. So I think we need to really put some thought to that. 34, his interests are divided. In the same way, a woman who is no longer married or has never been married can be devoted to the Lord and holy in body and in spirit. But a married woman has to think about her earthly responsibilities and how to please her husband. So there it is. Okay, same thing for the wives. Okay, I think that's it. All right, 35. I'm saying this for your benefit. Okay, and I have to say, I mean, I benefited greatly from reading this over and over and over again. It is a benefit to us. Imagine being in a marriage where both of you are putting effort into pleasing each other instead of battling each other. Okay, that'd be a neat relationship to be part of. And he's saying it's for your benefit. Do not, he says, for your benefit, not to place restrictions on you. So he's not saying, you know, I'm trying to narrow God's grace and what you can and can't do. I'm just trying to give you some advice. I want you to do whatever will help you serve the Lord best and with as few distractions as possible. I'm going to end right here. So I'm going to take a couple minutes to spend on this section. Okay, so I read this over and over and over again. And I feel like this should be like the last verse. This is a verse that you should underline. This is a verse that you should have in your mind. And it's that last part where he says, I want you to, you know, to do whatever is helpful to serve the Lord best with as few distractions as possible. What this means is that you're going to have a pretty limited life. If you are truly investing in your responsibilities on earth and your responsibilities to your spouse, I'm talking to married people right now. If you're investing energy into those two things, earthly responsibilities, raising kids, having being the best you can at your work, and then doing everything you can to please your spouse, there's not a lot of room for other things. You can't do this well. And this is an act of serving the Lord. You can't do it well if you're not putting energy and effort into that. And that your energy and effort are going into a thousand other things. It can't happen. It can't. If you notice that you have 15 hobbies, something's wrong. Okay, I will tell you that you are not doing a good job serving your wife, loving your wife, and taking care of your earthly responsibilities. You can't. Okay? Because a relationship takes a lot of effort. Raising your kids takes a lot of effort. Doing your job the best you can takes a lot of effort. So don't be shocked that you don't have hours and hours of playtime. You're not a little kid anymore. Okay, we're shocked that our lives are pretty, I don't want to say boring. I mean boring in the sense of all these activities don't fill up our time. You know what I mean? Because I think this could be exciting if you're actually, you know, trying to come up with ways to love your wife better. But we're just like, man, I don't understand why I can't have, I can't spend 6, 7, 8 hours playing 2 rounds of golf. What's going on? That's bizarre. You know, I can't watch football for 12 hours on Sunday. You mean I got to use that time to think of how to serve my wife, be with my kids, maybe throw the football to my kid instead of sit there watching football all day? I think you get the point. Okay, what you need to do within your current situation, okay, so that you can serve the Lord best. That's what he's saying. What do you need to do within your current situation to serve the Lord the best? Okay, serve the Lord best. Are you serving the Lord best? Not just okay, but best. Okay, with as few distractions as possible. Okay, I'm getting to the point with smartphones that I want to start breaking them. I went from telling you had to have them to now wanting to break yours. I am frustrated that a kid can't talk to me for more than 4 minutes without looking at his phone. Okay, if that's a distraction for you, okay, break it. Okay, because you want to know something really cool, especially kids? You know, it's cool to kind of stand out sometimes. You want to stand out? Tell them you don't have a phone, because you'd be the only person who doesn't have a phone. Okay, just throwing that out there. Distractions. You can't even do homework. Adults can't do their work without checking their Facebook 18 times within an hour. Okay? You're being distracted. It's not your best. Okay? Again, I think those things are good. They can be used well. I'm just giving you a practical example just to make you mad. So I'm going to pray, and then I'll take some questions. God, thank you for your word. Thank you that we see that we aren't left here on our own to do things. We're here on earth to love you as you loved us, to serve others as you served us, so that we can make much of you, and that we've done this, or that we do this, with your Holy Spirit. We thank you for that and pray that as a result of these practical things of loving our wives well or loving our husbands well or in the situation of being single, serving the Lord well, pray that we can make much of you and bring glory and honor to you. Amen. All right, any thoughts or questions? No? Go ahead. Yeah. Okay. So Lisa made a good point because I didn't talk about all the possible situations, talking about ideal situations as far as marriages go. And if you are in a marriage where there is abuse or there's infidelity and things like that going on, do you just stay there? And no, I would never tell you that. And I didn't address that, so I'm glad you brought that up. So no, you never stay in that situation. And if you have questions about divorce, remarriage, and all that, this book will be downstairs. It goes through, I was kind of surprised how many opinions there are on each of these topics, but this just looks at a lot of information. It's very good. So I'll put that downstairs in the cafeteria, or the title of it is God, Marriage, and Family, rebuilding a biblical foundation. Is that Andreas Kostenberger? Andreas Kostenberger. It's very good because he's not giving you his opinion. He's just giving one. There's tons of biblical references. And then he'll also lay out the different views on things. So, yeah, thank you for bringing that up, though. I don't want you to think that I just said, I mean, I did say about staying in your situation. If your situation is abusive or, dangerous, thank you, then, yeah, please get out of that. Yeah.
So it's not grounds for divorce. It's grounds, but it doesn't mean that, yes, you definitely should get divorced because there's infidelity,
Because it's allowed, you're saying, doesn't mean jump on that opportunity to divorce.
Right.
That there is.
But maybe step outside of the situation and
on. Yeah.
I mean, 1 Corinthians 7 is really why Dale and I got back together.
Yeah. Right.
But not divorced.
Yeah. Right. No, that's a great point. And I'm saying it all in like ideal situations. There's so many difficult situations that's why I brought the book so I can make sure I recommend that for all those other situations that people are in. Did everybody hear what Cindy said? She's just saying just because there is justification for divorce doesn't mean you have to take advantage of that. And because she's really strong on people staying married, if it means just being separated for some time and then getting back together, she would encourage that. So, yeah.
Of Monica praying hard along with her friends to get me to the point where I needed to be. And then the other thing, because it's difficult enough, even if you're both believers starting out in a relationship, you can't forget the attitude or the idea that there's a learning curve. And no matter how strong of a believer you are, you're still going to go through that learning curve and making mistakes and having things confront you that you're not sure how to handle.
Yeah.
So a lot of the answers, as much as we'd like to say, it is right here, it's in the Bible, and that is true, it is. But it's up to us as individuals. How do we grasp that? What do we do to further that? And I think that's where a lot of problems come today in a marriage. I think had it not, Monica, as many problems as we had, she was dedicated to not giving up on me.
That's a great story. I don't know if you guys heard that. Dave saying that, him and his wife were married 20 years before she was a believer, and then married 20 years before he became a believer. And there's that idea of, right there's what he said. Remain in that situation. Wives, you don't know. You could be part of what brings your husband to the Lord. And I'm sure she's excited about that. That's a great story.
We see it now, too, with our children. So we're going through that same type of thing where we're constantly praying and trying to give example and hoping that they're going to catch on to what it's about. And that's all we can do at this point. We can only introduce, we can't change.
Right.
God has to do that on his own, just like he had to do with me. takes a lot of give and take in a relationship. You have to really make it work, and it's something you can't quit working at.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Out of the equation, it makes you realize that you do have to work on things. And we've had some rough times in the beginning, too. And, you know, Bruce wasn't a believer when we first got married. And for 6 years, I prayed for him until he became a believer. And it was a really rough time. But when you take that option out, it makes you have to work on your marriage.
Yeah. And I also want to just, please don't take this the wrong way, but I just want to make it clear that God doesn't want us to be in that situation. He tells believers not to be married to unbelievers. So, and they would probably tell you, yeah, that wasn't a good idea to do that. So for those of you who aren't married and you're a believer, avoid these problems by not marrying an unbeliever. And there's a reason why. God's not mean. He's not like, oh, I know you really like him, and that's why I'm not going to let you marry him, because he's not a believer. Okay, he's saying, here's what can happen, a lot of struggle. So, thanks so much for those comments. Okay, we're going to respond.